All right. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to be here. Anne, it was really nice listening to your sharing. You're doing everything right. So we are here for the Tao Te Ching. Oh, you know what? I have a whole hour. I can play a song, can't I? I like doing that. Okay, if you guys will be patient. I didn't think about that till just this moment, so I'm not prepared, but it should only take me a minute to find a song. And as you guys know, this time of year, I like to play holiday songs. All right, let me, gosh, there's so many good ones. Maybe we should just do an hour of song. Let me share my screen. I'm going to see what happens if I click that checkbox too. We'll find out. Okay, so this is Pentatonics. And I think I'm going to go ahead and play Mary, Did You Know? And Sharon, you're not muted. I hear you're typing or something. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to play another Christmas song. I can find the one I want. I can't think of the name. This is the whole thing. My mind is just dying. Something about a child. What child is this? What child is this? There it is. Okay, watch this. Wish you guys could hear my heart beating right now. These songs are brilliant, and I only listen to them, you know, 1 month out of the year. So it's just really, really, really nice. I'm practically out of breath now. So we are here with the Tao Te Ching. And we're starting on page, well, if you have this particular book, page 9, but it's verse 4. And this is the Derek Lynn translation. So I'll read verse 4. The Tao is empty. When utilized, it is not filled up. So deep It seems to be the source of all things. It blunts the sharpness, unravels the knots, dims the glare, mixes the dusts. So indistinct, it seems to exist. I don't know whose offspring it is. Its image is the predecessor of the emperor. All right, let me just open up another version of the Tao. I actually have three with me today in order to give some cross-reference of how people translate this. Oh, interesting. So Derek started with the Tao is empty, and Stephen Mitchell starts with the Tao is like a well. But if you think of a well, of course, when you get to the very, very bottom, there's water, but all the way down to the bottom, right? It is empty. So he says the Tao is like a well, used but never used up. Derek says, so deep. It seems to be the source of all things. Stephen Mitchell says, it is like the eternal void filled with infinite possibilities. Oh my goodness, so different. Derek says, it blunts the sharpness, unravels the knots, dims the glare, mixes the dusts. I even double checked to make sure I was reading the same verse in both books. Like, wow, am I on the wrong page in one of these? And Stephen Mitchell doesn't have that verse at all. And then Derek says, so indistinct, it seems to exist. I do not know whose offspring it is. Its image is the predecessor of the emperor. And that's a very important line. And Stephen Mitchell says, it is hidden, but always present. I don't know who gave birth to it. It is older than God. So it's interesting that Derek would have an entire verse that Stephen doesn't have. So let's go look at Wayne Dyer, see what he did with number four. When I first started the spiritual path, but then I took a break that was many years long. But I think this was my first step on the spiritual path. I read the Bible like this, just like this. I had like seven different translations of the Bible surrounding me. I only have three of the Tao, but I had like seven different translations of the Bible. And I read each one because they each translated the same thing a little different. And I kind of felt like looking at how all these people translated it, I could like get between the translations. Does that make sense? And get into what the essence was supposed to be. So I feel like I'm doing the same thing now with the Tao. But here's what Wayne Dyer does. He says, the Tao is empty, but inexhaustible, bottomless, the ancestor of it all. And then he does have the middle verse. Within it, the sharp edges become smooth, the twisted knots loosen, the sun is softened by a cloud, the dust settles into place. Where again, Derek said mixes the dusts. I didn't know what mixes the dusts means, but I can maybe see the dust settles into place. If you imagine when things fall, they just fall where they do, right? And so the dust would get mixed if they came from different areas of the world. It is hidden, but always present. I do not know who gave birth to it. It seems to be common ancestor of all, the father of things. So having read three translations, I think I'm ready. So the Tao is empty. If any of you all practice awareness, watching awareness, you know this is true because one thing that we see when we practice awareness, watching awareness, is that anything we can see is not what I am, right? And to me, that's part of the fun of awareness, watching awareness, is noticing that anything I can see, and the ego is so tricky, you know, when you're practicing, I mean, I guess I don't know what your experience is. Sometimes I assume that it, in one way or another, we all have the same experiences, but my experience was when I first started watching awareness, awareness, at first I was, I was looking for that opening of the heart to occur. And then when that opening of the heart occurred, I thought that was the awareness. And I don't know how many months I was doing that. And then one day I realized that I'm here whether the heart's open or not, you know? So that open heart can't be it. You know, that was, I heard Anne talking about, you know, she sits down to look, is she expecting anything? That was my goal. You know, I had a goal. When I meditated, I wanted to feel that good feeling of the open heart. But that's not what I am. And so then I was completely confused. Like, well, then what the heck is awareness? What the heck am I? And I started looking. And the next thing that my attention settled on, which again lasted months, and I really thought I was right, was just sensations in the head, right? Just these sensations. And I don't know what they're caused by, maybe by the brain activity, because the brain's pretty active. So I can imagine it might cause sensations. But I started just focusing on these sensations in the head, thinking I was watching awareness. And then one day, I mean, these things, I call these things miracles because they just happen, right? One day it hit me like a ton of bricks. Who sees these sensations, right? Hush. I mean, that is like, holy shit. Holy shit. And then I started looking for me, you know, for what I am. And to put it bluntly, I couldn't find it, even though I knew it was there. I call it, what I say is, you know, when we say awareness, watching awareness, that's really being aware that you are aware. The watching is just a word that Michael Langford picked. But the watching itself is not a truth. Because you can't watch awareness like you can watch the opening of your heart or like you can watch the sensations in your head. It's really more awareness being aware it's aware. Right? Which is an awful lot of awareness in one sentence. Awareness being aware that it's aware, but you can't actually see it. You can't actually watch it in the same way you watch objects, but you know that you're aware because you can be aware of anything and everything that happens. But if you really start examining, and again, that's just another word because in a way you can't examine it. You can be aware of it. If you really start examining awareness, what you find is it's totally empty and it contains everything. You know, another game I sometimes, you know, like to play during meditation is, and of course I've played all these games with you guys. If you were in Gentle Healing here too, while we were doing the Rupert Spirit book, I was always assigning these games. And to me, these games are critically important. You know, but it's kind of fun in meditation. Just wiggle the toe for a second. Notice. Now the mind will tell you the head's up here and the toe is down there, right? But that's just the mind. If you pay attention, that toe that you're wiggling is within awareness, right? And in fact, if you have those strong vibrations in the head that I have, you know, that I use to confuse for awareness, you can actually pay attention to your toe wiggling and the vibrations in your head at the same time. And again, the mind says the head is up here, the toes are down there. But if you ignore the mind and just pay attention, they're both within awareness. In fact, the entire body is within awareness. And you know, if you're like me, when you get really, really quiet, the entire body actually begins to come very alive with sensations. So you feel all these little tingles and all these little sweet feelings that you're not always aware of, right? So you can feel this whole, I think this is what Eckhart Tolle is talking about when he talks about the inner body. You can feel the sensations of all of the body. This is why Rupert Spira also says the body is nothing but sensations. which I don't totally agree with because it's also visual. but you know, when your eyes are closed, it's nothing but sensations. And so you can feel all of these sensations that are the body. And you can feel them all at once. And even though the head is saying, I am aware of these sensations, and the head has a, at least for me, has a little pointer right here. It's like it's like saying, I, the head, am aware of all of these sensations, you know, and I see the mind saying that. But if I ignore the mind and I just notice the sensations in the toes, the sensations in the legs, the sensations in the butt, the sensations in the head, in the arms, in the chest, they're all just equally within awareness. In fact, there's no distance between the sensations and the awareness of the sensations. There's no distance. There's distance between the head and the toe, but there's no distance between awareness and the awareness of the sensations on any part of the body. So these little games that I sometimes play, and there are other times, in fact, probably more, I'm just sitting there abiding in awareness. Of awareness. I play these games more to get myself in position, if you will. But what I like about these games is they, at least for me, they point at what can't be pointed at, which is awareness. They point at the fact that it's empty, it's borderless, it's everywhere at the same time, it has no judgments, it has no thoughts. You know, it just becomes incredibly, incredibly obvious that it is empty. And I remember, you know, when I was a spiritual student at an earlier time, I remember when I hated when people would say, you know, they didn't use the word the Tao or they didn't use the word awareness. They were talking about truth or God or spirit at that time. But they would say that it was empty or that it was nothing. And I hated that. I didn't want it to be empty or nothing. I wanted it to be something, you know, like that wonderful feeling in my heart when I meditate. But that's just not the truth. It's empty and it's nothing. And that's what enables us to be aware of everything. If awareness was something, its own presence would block out other things. Right? Like if I put this book up, this book is something. Now you can't see my face because the presence of the book blocks out my face. Right? And in fact, a good example of something is the mind. Right? When the mind is really, really active, although awareness is entirely there, in a way, the mind blocks out awareness. Not really, not if you really pay attention, but in a way, that's true. When your mind is really, really active, you're not aware that you're aware, right? So if awareness was something like the book is or like the mind is, it would block out something. And in that way, it can't be infinite, you know, nor can anything. Nothing could be infinite. So awareness has to be empty. It has to be nothing in order to allow all things. As crazy as it sounds, it's actually even logical, right? It has to be nothing. So when he starts off, the Tao is empty. All I have to say to that is, yes. Yes, it is. And then he says, when utilized, it is not filled up. And let's see, Stephen said, it is used but never used up. And Wayne says, it's inexhaustible, bottomless. So they're all saying the same thing there, which is good. It makes it easy. As someone who used to journal with spirit, in a way I still do, it's just my experience of it is different now. When I sit down and write the tips in the morning, you know, that's not really coming from my intellectual knowing mind. That's just happening. It's a spontaneous happening. But used to, before that occurred in the way that it does now, there was an experience of hearing a voice. You know, it was like taking dictation. Just like if you were hearing me now and you were attempting to write what I am saying, You know, it was that same kind of thing. It was just taking dictation. And as you guys know, I wrote quite a bit under that experience. I mean, I wrote many, many personal messages. I wrote NTI. I wrote many, many more personal messages for Laurent and me together. I wrote the teachings of Inner Ramana. That I wrote the thoughts of awakening, right? All this stuff under that experience of, quote, hearing a voice. And I did it for years. So you might imagine, and I hear the word imagine, that I became pretty confident in it. But in reality, every day when I put my pen to paper, I didn't know if anything would come. Because there was this thought that I must have exhausted it by now, right? It's never exhausted. It never runs out. You know, my experience of it even now is different. But, you know, when I sit down to write those tips every day, it's that same clarity that's coming. It's just not coming as, I don't hear it as a voice anymore. It just comes right straight through me. But it never runs out. It's amazing. You know, we have this idea. Well, you know, it's funny because Stephen Mitchell starts his off saying the Tao is like a well. I'm going to call that a mistranslation. Because if we really think of a well, what does happen to a well if you use it for maybe 100 years or 150 years? It runs dry, right? And that's what we think. That's what we think of inner wisdom. We think it is going to run dry. It is going to run out. Someday it is going to leave me on my own. All right. And that's not true. That's not true. It never runs out. In fact, maybe of these translations, the way I like the way that Wayne worded it best, the Tao is empty, but inexhaustible, bottomless, right? It just never runs out, right? Derek says, when utilized, it is not filled up. But I would like that probably if it said when utilized, it does not run out, right? It does not run out. But by filled up, I think what he means is, and this is another good thing to look at. He starts off saying the Tao is empty. When utilized, it is not filled up. I think that what he might mean by that is it never becomes anything other than what it is, right? It's always remains empty. He then says, so deep, it seems to be the source of all things. And I kind of giggled at that when I read it. It seems to be, you know, it seems to be the source of all things. Wayne calls it the ancestor of all. And Stephen calls it filled with infinite possibilities. So what does all of this have to do with being a leader? Because that's what we're here to talk about. And I think what this really means is, we can lean on it. You know, I don't know what kinds of problems or challenges we may face in the future, but our tendency is to think, and this is really important for everyone to hear. It's like a hidden belief. You know, most of us would not, well, maybe some of us would consciously be aware, but most of us would not be consciously aware of the fact that we have this hidden belief that at some point, it won't be there for me, right? Like there's some line I'm going to cross, some problem that's big enough, some time when I've screwed up enough. I mean, you know, somewhere there's a limit and it won't be there for me. And then I have to figure this out. I have to take care of things. You know, I have to do this my way. In other words, we actually believe that we, and this is the ego me, the mind, body, personality. We actually believe that we are more powerful than God. Right? When God fails, I'll be there to pick up the pieces. When God fails, I can make this happen. That's in our minds. And of course, that's the ego. I think the Course describes that as the ego usurping. Is that the right word, ladies? Jacqueline and Ooh, go ahead, unmic yourself and say it. I can't read your lips.
Usurping.
Usurping. There we go. The ego usurping the power of God. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, when we say things like the ego believes that it has usurped, that's a funny word, the power of God, that kind of distances from us. Like the ego is another thing that thinks it has usurped the power of God. What we really need to look at is that's what we think. That's what we think every time we try to take control, every time we try to figure things out, every time we feel that burden of, oh my God, how am I going to make this work? That's what we think. So for lead as leaders, it's really important for us to realize that that the Tao, God, Spirit, whatever the heck you want to call it, is always there and always available to us. We just have to turn to it. Right? It doesn't fail. If you can hear this without guilt, please hear it without guilt. We do. We're the ones who fail. We fail to turn to it. You know, Ramana Maharshi used to say over and over again to different people, you know, because in India, especially in his time, everybody traveled by train. Right? That was how you got from one part of India to another, is by train. And so he used to always say to people, why do you stand on the train holding your luggage? Why don't you put your luggage down on the train floor and let it carry your luggage? You know? And he's talking about just this thing, right? We stand on a moving train holding our luggage. Oh my God, I got to get my luggage there to Pompeii or Bombay, right? Bombay. I got to get my luggage there to Bombay. If I don't hold my luggage, it's not going to get to Bombay, right? Well, bull. You just put your luggage down the train, it's still going to get there. So we need to realize that the Tao, God, Spirit, Truth, Reality, whatever word you want to put on it, that it can manage everything. And the best way to utilize that Tao, which can never be fully utilized, you know, cannot be used up is what I mean. The best way to use that Tao is to be as empty as it is. Right? As empty as it is. When we are as empty as the Tao is, we are completely in harmony with the Tao and we can be moved by the Tao. When we think we know stuff and we think we can figure it out and I think my ideas are better than your ideas, we're blocking it entirely. So the best way to have access to this infinite wisdom is to be empty ourselves. And of course, NTI calls this being the empty shell. And you want to hear just a funny little trivia, a little Regina Don Acres trivia? When I wrote NTI, I had never read the Tao, ever. I didn't know a single thing about the Tao. I think I heard like one, I shouldn't say a single thing. I think when I was in college and I was in some Asian literature class, I think we might have studied one or two verses of the Tao. And I remember thinking that crap's ridiculous. You know? So that was I did have a little bit of quote experience with the Tao. But other than that, isn't that ridiculous, you know, stuff that we read in college in an Asian literature class? I didn't have any experience with the Tao. And yet the whole time I was writing NTI First Corinthians, I had this strong, strong feeling that it was coming from the author of the Tao. I didn't know the name then. We would call him Lao Tzu. I didn't know that name then. So just a little trivia. But it's interesting because the Tao Te Ching is about emptiness, right? Like I said, a lot of people think it's about balance. It's not about balance. It's about emptiness. The Tao is empty. And if we want to be moved by the Tao and utilize that infinite intelligence, then we need to be as empty as it is, or the empty shell, as NTI First Corinthians called it. Now the next verse, excuse me, I need to stop eating nuts for lunch before I teach, because there's always some little piece of nut somewhere hiding in my mouth, just waiting to choke me once I start talking. They get a kick out of that, those nuts. All right. So the next verse Stephen Mitchell doesn't have, but Derek and Wayne both have it. So Derek says, it blunts the sharpness, unravels the knots, dims the glare, mixes the dusts. Or Wayne says, within it, the sharp edges become smooth, the twisted knots loosen, the sun is softened by a cloud, the dust settles into place. I really love the way Wayne says within it. Because my experience of truth or spirit, whatever we want to call it, my experience of it is it never coerces. You know, like it's not going, if I'm in my wrong mind, it's not going to show up and, you know, and forcefully show me that I'm in my wrong mind and force me into my right mind. It doesn't do that. If I have the willingness, if I'm walking around with a heart full of willingness to see that I'm in my wrong mind, the second I'm in my wrong mind, or maybe minutes after I'm in my wrong mind, that awareness will click. I'll see that. And then when I see that, I can immediately open to spirit. But, you know, if we imagine spirit for a moment, I don't like doing this because too many people have this false belief. This is just a symbol. We'll use this rock. If we imagine spirit as this beautiful rock, as a thing, right? You know, spirit just kind of hangs back here waiting for me to turn my attention to it. It doesn't start hitting me in the head. Hey, idiot, get out of your wrong mind. It hangs around back here waiting for me to pay attention to it. And then when I turn and pay attention to it, it gives me everything I need in a very gentle and loving way. So I love the way that Wayne Dyer says, within it, the sharp edges become smooth. In other words, if I never turn my attention to it, those sharp edges aren't going to come smooth. I can live my entire lifetime with sharp edges, or being blunt, or being gruff, or being judgmental, or being mean, or, you know, being whatever word you want to put on that, right? I can spend my entire life hard. That's how it feels to me, hard. And spirit just hangs out back here, you know, letting me be hard, right? Just letting me be hard. Totally not at all upset by that. So again, I love the way Wayne says, within it, the sharp edges become smooth, but I have to step within it. I have to want those sharp edges to become smooth. I have to have a heart full of willingness, genuine willingness, right? If I don't have all of that, again, the sharp edges can stay sharp until the day I die. So, you know, Derek says it a little different. He says it blunts the sharpness, but that almost makes it sound like it does it without my participation, and that's not true. It requires my willingness to step into it, my willingness to give my attention to it. This is a partnership. One word that's often used is emerging, right? And emerging is where apparently, and again, this is another symbol because ultimately it's not true, but apparently two, me and spirit, merge and become one. Right. And again, that's a symbol. It's not true because there never is a me and a spirit. But that's the feel of it. That's the experience of it. And that merging cannot occur without my participation. Because notice, if this is me all hard and this is spirit all open and soft, notice this isn't a merging. This is a taking over. Right. And spirit doesn't do that. In order to merge, I have to open up too. That's what we call willingness. In order to merge and for the two to really become one, I have to be as open and as empty and as, you know, as willing as the Tao. Otherwise, it's just not possible. So So within it, the sharp edges become smooth. The twisted knots become loosened, or as Derek says, it unravels the knots. To me, that's talking about the false beliefs, the confused thinking, the real idiocy of the mind, right? It unravels all of those knots. The twisted knots loosen is the way that Wayne sees it. And for me, and probably for many of you, this happened for me primarily through the process of journaling. There was something about looking at my errors through journaling that loosened those knots, right? I don't know in my case if it would have ever occurred without the blessing of journaling. I could just see so clearly when I put the pen to paper and listened to wisdom and looked at, you know, why I was angry or why this is ticking me off or whatever, why I thought I was so right and he was so wrong. You know, when I sat down with spirit and I looked at that stuff through journaling, I over and over and over again, I saw the mistake in my thinking. And over and over and over again, those knots were loosened so that I could let go of many, many, many mistakes in my thinking, which of course just, you know, resulted in an experience, a happier and freer me. But that's the experience of it. What it really does is it's removing some of the things. Remember I said if awareness was a thing, it would block something. Well, all of those knots in our thinking, you know, all of that confusion, all of those false beliefs, those are things. And they're blocking awareness, blocking a reality, blocking love's presence. So by having the knots loosened, what we're really apparently creating is the space in order to become aware of reality. Right, we're removing the things that obscure reality. Got Tao Te Ching's everywhere. So within it, the sharp edges become smooth, the twisted knots loosen, the sun is softened by a cloud, and in fact, Derek says it dims the glare. It's kind of a funny, sometimes the symbols in Chinese spirituality are the exact opposite of our symbols. Like we tend to think of the sun or light as a symbol of truth. But here it's a symbol of blindness. And, you know, I'm sure you've all been blinded by the sun, especially if you're driving a car towards the sun with a windshield that's not particularly clean. You can't see for the glare, right? So when it says the sun is softened by a cloud and dims the glare, it's really talking about removing the blindness so that you can see things as they are. There was an example that came up. Boy, it flew out of my mind already. It came up either yesterday or early today. And I remember thinking, ooh, that'd be a perfect example to show people the difference between seeing things as they are and seeing things as you think they should be. But it's already left my mind, whatever it was. But we do that all the time. Instead of seeing things as they are, we're blinded by what we think they should be. So here's another example. There's a contractor that we have accepted his bid to work on the deck at the retreat house because the railing is loose. And he's going to tighten it up for us. And we accepted his bid, before we went to Italy, so a couple of months ago. But since then, he's been working in Wyoming on some big project, so he's been gone. And he wrote to me late last week, maybe, or over the weekend, and said he was done in Wyoming and that he was coming back. And he wanted to work at the retreat house on Friday and Saturday of this week to do that work. And he wanted to meet with me in Pueblo West on Thursday to sign the papers and pay, you know, we have to pay a half up front. Well, I go to La Vida on Thursdays and Fridays. So I told him I wasn't available on Thursday or Friday unless he wanted to meet me in La Vida. You know, that would be great. He wrote back and said, no, he said, but he would be back Wednesday afternoon. And if I wanted to meet with him Wednesday afternoon, I could do it then. Well, I have an appointment to get my nails done, my hair cut, and then a dinner party. So I told him that and I said, but you can come to the salon or you can come to where I'm having dinner. And in fact, he's done work at her house before, so he knows her. And he said, okay. Well, this morning I got up and there was this funny, funny email from him. In fact, let me read it to you. It's just a hilarious email. Let's see, I guess it would be in my trash. Okay, here it is. He says, after giving this situation more thought, unfortunately, our company does not do business like this. You are obviously busy with nail appointments and a dinner party. We do not discuss business prior or during other activities. When you are not busy here in Pueblo West, we can meet privately to go over your needs at the house in La Vida. The meeting we have has to be conducted in your Pueblo West home prior to commencing the job in La Vida. Now, I just laughed at that. And I actually wrote to him and I apologized for how busy I am. I told him I would be happy to, I was planning to go to La Vida tonight, but I would be happy to go to La Vida tomorrow morning instead if he could, you know, come in the morning or next week. And I gave him times next week. I haven't heard back from him yet. But let's imagine that I read that email with my wrong mind. I mean, shoot, I've been waiting 2 months for this guy to, you know, to be free. You know, I could have hired another contractor and had the job done by now, right? And he didn't write to me till Saturday or Sunday to ask me to be available. You know, I got stuff on my calendar. I got plans, you know, and now he's making fun of me because I have a nail appointment, you know, or whatever. If I had responded that way, and then I probably would have written some defensive email or angry email, or maybe just dropped him and started looking for somebody else. You know, if I had done that, I would have been seeing things as I thought they should be. You see? I think it should be this way. I think he should be understanding of my schedule. I think he should realize that I've been waiting a month or two for him to get back to me. I've been waiting patiently. I'm the good one here. I think he should. Let's see, there should be some other shoulds in there. I think he, well, whatever. So this is where people make mistakes. This is what blinds us. We see things as we think they should be rather than as they are. If you see things as they are, life is easier. If you see things as you think they should be, you're fighting your way through life. And one reason you're fighting your way through life is you're actually struggling against something that isn't even there, which is your imaginary should. Right? Your imaginary should. That's what you're fighting. So who are you really fighting? You're fighting yourself. You know, you made up the obstacle. You made up how it should be. And now you're fighting against that, and it's not even there. When you see clearly, you just see things as they are. So here's how it hit me when I received this email this morning. It's like, okay, that's cool. You know, maybe it will work out better if I don't go to La Vida today. I have a lot to do. You know, he has his point of view. Of course, he might not even see my email in time, you know, to catch me tomorrow, but that doesn't matter because I can use the time here to do this. So sure. Sure, I can, you know, I can wait and go to La Vida tomorrow after our meeting. You know, I mean, it's not a big deal. When you see things as they are, everything is easy. Everything is easy. But again, that can only come from not knowing how things are supposed to be. If I had it set in my mind that I know I should go to La Vida tonight because that was my plan, right? Again, I'd be making up something that I couldn't see through. I wouldn't even be able to see that it's okay that I don't go to La Vida tonight. I wouldn't even be able to see that. So in China, the sun, which shines in your face just like all of your expectations and your shoulds and your opinions do, it actually blinds you. So what this is saying is that when you are in the Tao, which is emptiness, that dims the glare. It's like softening the sun with a cloud, right? When the cloud covers the sun, you're not blinded by the sun anymore. And again, these symbols are completely the opposite of what we usually use because it's kind of funny. We usually refer to this clouds as the false beliefs and the opinions. And we say, remove the clouds and you'll see the sun. So it's like the exact opposite symbols. But you can see their point. You can see where they get that from, right? The sun blinds you. And if you let go of all of these obstacles that you have in your own mind about how things should be, what your expectations are, what your beliefs are, what your opinions are, what your point of view is, et cetera, then that's just like a cloud coming over the sun so that now you can see. I see. I don't have to go to La Vida tonight, right? I see. I can get these things done if I don't go to La Vida tonight. I see. I can just offer him this. And that's still, the funny thing is, you still got to be careful even with that, because where humans will sometimes make the next mistake is now they have a new expectation, right? The new thought is, okay, I changed my plans for him. He better come see me by tomorrow. I don't actually know that he's going to do that. He's driving from Wyoming today. I don't even know that he'll see my email, right? So I may be staying home tonight and never hearing from him. That has to be okay too. You see, that's just another should. Now that I've made the sacrifice of changing my schedule, he should meet with me tomorrow. You see how that blinds me again? That's just going to be another thing, covering up whatever perfection is there. Only emptiness allows us to see. Only emptiness gives us clarity. Only emptiness sets us free. So I'm going to go back to Wayne's. I like his translation here. So within it, the sharp edges become smooth. The twisted knots loosen. The sun is softened by a cloud. And then he says the dust settles into place, right? Derek says mixes the dusts. It mixes the dusts. But I think dust settles into place is a nice image. I mean, really, to me, what this is saying is everything is fine. You know, everything is fine. Not it's going to be fine. Somehow, if I surrender, if I be empty, it's going to work out the way I want. Now, let me ask you, in emptiness, where is the way I want? Right? The way I want would be something, therefore it would not be emptiness. Do you agree? Right? So this isn't about holding on to a goal and saying, you know, if I surrender, if I make myself empty, then it'll work out the way I want, because that's not emptiness. That's not surrender. In fact, I think it was today's gentle healing tip that talked about how the mind fakes surrender. That's a good example right there. I know I need, you know, this deck fixed before the end of the year, which actually I don't know that, but we'll pretend like I know I need this deck fixed by the end of the year, right? Now, if I surrender and be at peace with his schedule instead of mine, I will get what I want, the deck fixed by the end of the year. That's not surrender. That's actually attempting to manipulate God. You know, like surrender just enough to get God to do what I want God to do. Right? That's not surrender. That's the mind's fake surrender. So in order to be genuinely surrendered, you have to be fully empty. But what this last line is adding, and see that everything is perfect right now. There can't be some future goal of it will be perfect when. Everything it's perfect now. It's perfect right now when I am changing my plans. I'm going to stay home tonight. I have no idea if he'll see my email tomorrow. I mean, it's perfect right now. The dust is settling into place right now. Everything is fine. So within it, within the Tao, the sharp edges become smooth, the twisted knots loosen, the sun is softened by a cloud, the dust settles into place. And that's all now. And because in emptiness has no judgments. Emptiness has no withholding. It would be perfect if, right? Emptiness doesn't have anything. Okay, so Wayne says, it is hidden but always present. I do not know who gave birth to it. Oh, yes, Jacqueline, you want to say something?
Yeah, thanks, Regina. I was just curious whether, and I appreciate your example, but I'm just curious whether you saw thoughts in your mind, you know, what if I'd done this? What if I'd done that? You know, he needs to come see me. Were any of those thoughts in your mind, or at this point, were you just able to naturally behave the way you behaved?
Yeah, what I did was I laughed because I could see his point of view and I understood that he only saw his point of view. You know, I understood that it never occurred to him that I might have had things on my calendar long before he contacted me saying he wanted it. I mean, I just understood that he was only, he had tunnel vision, and I laughed at that, and then I worked with that. And that's why, again, if you read, in fact, I'll go ahead and, we'll finish this next week. I'll go ahead and quickly read the email I sent to him. Let's see, that would be in my sent mail folder. Here it is. I said, "Hi, Mike. Okay, I understand. If you can come to my house between 8 and 11 tomorrow morning, I can delay going to La Vida until after our meeting. I am also available between 8 and 11 on Monday through Wednesday, December 17, 18, and 19. I apologize for my schedule. My appointments this week were on my calendar before I knew you'd want to meet this week. Also, now that we have the retreat house, I work in La Vida every Thursday and Friday. I typically drive down on Wednesday evenings so I can wake up there on Thursday and begin work right away. We are also hoping to hire you to paint the house in the spring. We are very interested in working with you. Please let me know when you'd like to meet." Right? So, you know, that was the email. And it's just shared a little bit of perspective with him, because it never hurts to share, because he wasn't thinking of my schedule, right? But this perspective was not shared in a defensive way, in an angry way, right? So this is the way, this is here. This is how it is. Because, you know, in the future, he's going to want to make appointments with me. So he might as well know I spend Thursdays and Fridays in La Vida now, right? But no, I laughed. In fact, I often laugh at the wrong mind now. I find it humorous. It's funny.
Yeah, for me, that feels like that scene in Revolver where you stand at the end of the bed and going, you know, I'm sorry, you're so much wiser than I am. Because for me, ego's going, what are you saying? He's the one that da-da-da-da-da.
Well, and at one time, Jacqueline, I would have, do you mind if I take a couple minutes of your time while we have this conversation? At one time, Jacqueline, that would have been my experience. My experience would have been the ego raging, oh my God, you know, blah, 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 but, you know, from my point of view, which is just as silly as his point of view. But the ego would have been raging from my point of view. And I actually would have used that scene in Revolver. This is how I always use that scene, always. I would have used that scene of Revolver to restrain myself from acting with my ego. And I probably still would have written a very similar email. So it would have, in that case, it would have come from restraint. This time it didn't come from restraint. It came from, you know, okay, this is where we're at, this is what we'll do. But there was a time it would have come from restraint. And I think that's a very, very important point. It's what I learned from The Revolver. It's why I love The Revolver movie so much, is that most people on the spiritual path, when something like this happens, they just jump right into their ego and act from ego anyway. And there's a period of time when restraint has to be practiced. The ego is loud as hell. You know it. It's screaming, just like in that scene in Revolver. And you simply are not doing what it says, because the wisdom is there and you're acting from the wisdom instead, right? But it feels like you're restraining yourself, holding yourself back. But it's going through that phase of restraint that enables you to get to where, you know, at least in my experience now, to where it's just a giggle. Okay, you know, he's not thinking, but that's all right. I can deal with this, you know. So it didn't go from wrong mind to giggle. It went from wrong mind through a phase of restraint to giggle. Okay? You're welcome. So, can I just take one more minute and finish this verse? All right, good. So he says, it is hidden, but always present. And again, it's hidden because of our mind. because the mind is something, right? And so because we're so focused on our mind, on our thoughts, on our points of view, on our beliefs, on how we think it should be, right? Because we're so focused on all that, we're not aware of the emptiness of wisdom, the peace of wisdom, the intelligence of wisdom, you know, what she calls, which they're calling the Tao. We're completely lost to it. So it appears hidden, but it's actually always present, which means it's always available to us. And then he says, I do not know who gave birth to it. It seems to be the common ancestor of all, the father of all things. And that, I think, is just a truth. You know, that our minds think in beginning and ends. So we think this must have had a beginning too, and we can't imagine its infiniteness, right? But we also can never, ever trace back far enough to find something prior to it. If we find something prior to it, then what we thought was it wasn't it. Just like the sensations in my head, right? For 6 months, I thought the sensations were it. And then I noticed there was something prior to it watching the sensations. Well, that means the sensations weren't it. And you will have this experience, I think, in meditation of backing up, backing up, backing up. But that's because you weren't there yet. There is no backing up from it, right? When you can't back up any further, you've found infinite awareness. So I'll just take a moment of silence after I let go of the mic, Dawn, and then I'll write in a title, okay? Thank you, everyone, and bye.